Welcome, Voltron fans. This is Mark Morrell, your host for Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast. We're coming at you this week with another episode review for Season 8 of Voltron Legendary Defender. I can't wait to get started. So let's get my co-host on, Greg Tyler. Welcome, Greg.
Hello, Mark. Hello, listeners and fellow fans from across the universe. We're back for another episode review, and this is a fun one.
Yeah, we are on episode 11 now of season 8, with only two more to go after this one.
That's right. This episode is called Uncharted Regions. Does that title sound familiar to you, Mark, at all?
Yes, for old school watchers of Voltron Defender of the Universe, Peter Cullen's words at the beginning of every episode, yes.
Yes.
From days of long ago, from Uncharted Regions of the Universe, comes a legend. The Legend of Voltron.
Man.
Defender of the Universe.
A mighty robot. Loved by good. Feared by evil.
Apparently there were uncharted regions of the universe back then, and I guess there still are in this version of Voltron.
Yes, it's a big universe in all of its realities.
Yeah, that's true. Can you imagine if you had to not only chart the universe, but then chart every reality?
That'd be unreal.
Yeah, I think that would be impossible.
Yeah, pretty darn near it.
But somehow we got to the point where we only ended up with one reality left in this whole thing.
Yeah, oh, spoilers! I'm sure no one has watched all of Season 8 by this point who's listening to this podcast.
Right. Because when the good guys go out to say, hey, we're going to stop her, and then it keeps on going and they don't stop her, is this just to see how far she'll take it?
Maybe. I guess we'll have to review this episode and find out.
Yeah. Yeah, I just love it every time the good guys say, we believe in ourselves and we're going to work together and stop them and stop those bad guys. And then the bad guys just seem to get more and more happening and the good guys don't stop them.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I don't know, but it's still, as an old school fan, still surprises me that we don't get at the end of every single episode, Lotor running away, I'll be back next time and I'll win.
Right.
Oh, well.
So, yeah, we are going to be doing Uncharted Regions this week. Mm-hmm. And then after this, there's only two more episodes left in season 8. And then the whole series is over.
I know. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah. Let's get started.
Let's do it.
Okay, Voltron Legendary Defender Season 8, Episode 11, Uncharted Regions, was written by Josh Hamilton, directed by Rie Koga. Additional voices in this are Christina Alabado, who plays Veronica, Adelaide Clemens, who plays Merla, Mimi Davila, who plays Rommel, John DiMaggio plays Commander Ozar and Tavo, Anna Gasteyer plays Krolia, Blake Michael plays Curtis. Nolan North plays both Sam Holt and Iverson. Lily Rabe plays Enerva. And Iqbal Thiba plays Slav.
Go Slav! I can never get enough of that guy.
1, 2, 3, yellow!
1, 2, 3, aluminum! He's so awesome.
Yeah. The description for this episode is, as Enerva gets closer to creating a catastrophic rift in reality, the Atlas crew races against time to figure out how to locate and stop her.
Let's hope they do.
You know, based on that, we're looking at this catastrophic rift in reality. So we recognize the fact that they've already established in the last episode that her trying to find that one reality where she can be back with her family again without going through all the pain and anguish of those 10,000 years of the Galra Empire, that is the one thing that she's striving for at all costs. In other words, she doesn't care if she destroys a whole bunch of realities to get there.
Yes, she is singularly focused. That's one way to put it.
Right. And we also find out in this episode that there's a certain group of people that she's been working with. She doesn't care about them either. She only cares about herself in this. And of course, we established in the previous episode that she is kind of psychotic and psychopathic.
Yeah, she has issues.
Yeah. So no matter what, she is going to get this one reality that she's searching for.
Yeah, or everyone else is going to die while she's trying.
So we start off this episode aboard her ship. Anerva opens her eyes and gasps. In an enormous room with vaulted ceilings, Anerva stands in the center. Now, in a wormhole, six spaceships resembling coffins. Well, we know this is the buildings that were around the Orion thing that became a spaceship.
Right.
Those are traveling at high speeds in the wormhole. And aboard one of the ships, Anerva enters the bridge and she turns to Merla and says, "Exit at coordinates Beta 4X7. The Paladins are aware of our plans." Merla says, "Is that a problem?" Anerva says, "No, it's an advantage." Now, she never describes what makes this an advantage, so can we try to figure that out?
I never put much thought into it.
Why is it an advantage that the Paladins know of their plans?
Maybe she needs more energy to be to power her evil plans, and if they show up, they're going to need a lot of power to try to stop her. I mean, that's how the episode unfolds. That's the only thing I can think of. What about you?
Yeah, looking back on this whole episode and what she needed to have happen, she couldn't have done this without the extra power. So, without the power to combine her mech with Lotor's mech into one, which is what eventually is going to get her to be able to access the other realities. She couldn't have done that without extra power, and she's going to get that extra power from multiple places. She's going to try to get it from, the Atlas and its crystal. She's going to try to get it from the Alteans. She's going to try to get it from the Balmera. There's a whole bunch of places that she tries to get this extra energy from to power her whole system that actually ends up combining her mech with Lotor's mech.
Man, you've just spoiled the entire episode.
I did. I completely did. But I think that's why it's an advantage, is because by bringing the Atlas and Voltron and the other Alteans and the Balmera and all that kind of stuff, that she realizes, they're actually going to help her to succeed.
And this makes me wonder what she would have done if they hadn't caught on. I mean, I assume she just would have kept bouncing around and picking up more energy sources wherever she could, biding her time. But she didn't have to.
Yeah, exactly. And she was keeping, those entities within the Alteans and within Allura.
Right.
And that worked to her advantage as well.
Yeah, she pretty much had it all figured out. Not bad for someone who's a little off her rocker.
Right. So we see the six ships exit through the wormhole and into an asteroid cluster. Now, aboard the Atlas in the sick bay, the Paladins surround a bed with Allura in it, and her eyes are closed. Karan says, "What happened to her?" Keith says, "It was the entity. Anerva was able to use it against her." Karan, looking at Allura, says, "I told her infiltrating Anerva's mind was too dangerous." Then he looks up and he says, "I told you all." Lance says, "She's going to pull through." Karan says, "How do you know?" And the PA system beeps, and Shiro says over the PA, "Paladins to the bridge." Now, before we go to the bridge, here's another thing. We never find out how Lance knows she's going to pull through.
He has no, he's not, he's just having to think positively because if you got to think one way, you might as well be positive. I mean, I can't imagine that he really knows. What do you think?
I don't know. I kind of get the sense that he's thinking it's going to be like every other time when she was, unconscious or out or something like that. She always came back. And there wasn't any reason to believe she couldn't come back from this.
Yeah, that's a fair point too.
She's got a lot going for her. It's not like she's, oh, Queen Amidala, Padme.
Yeah.
Remember when she had the twins?
Oh, I remember.
And after she had the twins, the robotic medical officer or whatever says, for reasons we can't understand, we're losing her, right?
She's lost the will to live, yes.
Right.
As my least favorite part of that entire trilogy. I mean, it's one thing to have an inexplicable fall to the dark side of the Force. And I'm sorry, but the lame excuse of he's afraid that his wife is going to die in childbirth doesn't hold water in my mind. The one thing that completely tips the scales for me is that an expecting mother having twins, which should be a joyous occasion despite the tragedy of what's around her, completely gives up after bothering to care enough to name them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I cannot stand that scene.
She's awake and alive enough to name them, and then she gives up, and she lost the will to live.
Yeah, she's like, ah, their name, screw it, see ya.
So, yeah, it's not that kind of a situation here, okay?
That's true.
Allura definitely wants to live.
Yeah, so maybe Lance recently rewatched the Star Wars prequel trilogy and realized that Princess Allura is nothing like Queen Amidala, so he's got it made. She's going to be back.
Yeah.
Good call.
So we go to the bridge. The Paladins and Shiro are there, and Shiro says, Anarva's been off the grid since we left Orion, until now. We just detected a wormhole signature at coordinates Beta 4 X7. Unfortunately, without Allura's ability to wormhole, we'll never get to her.
Okay, so quick question. Could Voltron, with its fast pack or those giant boosters or whatever those things were called, that with the big wings and the enormous engines, could Voltron have gotten to her?
But you can't do it without Allura.
She activates all the... Oh, that's true. They can't even form Voltron. Good call.
They can't form Voltron without Allura.
Oh, it's been a long day. I know that we all sound fresh-faced and ready to go, but it has been a long day, so that's my excuse.
The only thing I would have said is they have this tracker that every time a Nerva wormholes, they're able to track where she's at. Now, the only way I could say they'd get close to her is if she wormholed to a place that was close to where they were, and then they'd just be able to use the power of the Atlas to get there.
Right.
That's the only way I'd see it. But in any case, you know, Keith describes this later on, but even if they tried to just use Atlas power to get to her, it would take days or even weeks. And then once they got to her, she'd just wormhole out and they wouldn't be able to. And they'd go another days or weeks before they'd be able to catch up to her again.
Yeah. It would take them longer than it took the Lions to get to Earth, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Which was a little bit of a journey.
So you can see why they're upset that there's really nothing they can do without Allura.
Right, right, right.
So, aboard her ship, Anarva walks out on a bridge before Lotor's syncline robot, and she says, "We will be back on Altea soon, my son."
So I got to ask, all right, okay, I was going to get to this toward the part where the two mechs merge, but since it's already been spoiled, all right, we know that Lotor was in the Syncline mech in a rather disheveled state, to say the least.
Yeah.
When the mechs merge, is he still in there?
I think she cleaned up the corpse.
Yeah, she probably had enough people who would, you know, she probably had an Altean cleaning service or something. Anyway.
Yeah, I think she did.
Okay. Thanks.
Yeah. So, Anarva climbs into an enormous robot, places her hands on two glowing purple balls. An engine hums and the robot lights up. The top of the main pyramid opens, surrounded by a ring with glowing purple blades hanging from it. A nervous robot floats out into space. The ring rises up above the robot's head. The blades fan out, then spin. Inside the ring, images of different locations and environments on different planets appear, and a nervous sneers.
Yes, and everyone on the other side of the portal is on the other side of that ring is saying, it burns, 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 this ring of fire. Anyway, sorry.
Okay. I wasn't expecting to hear any Johnny Cash while we were doing this.
What were you expecting, Babylon 5?
Well, you could say they were going through a Stargate or something like that, but...
Oh, that's true. On Babylon 5, they would call that a jump gate, so there you go.
Yeah. So, on board the Atlas, in a small meeting room, Keith stands before a large group of people. Keith says, "We now know why Enerva retrieved Lotor's mech. Since it's made out of the same comet ore as Voltron, it has the ability to pierce realities. Enerva's going to use Lotor's mech to find her version of a perfect reality." Rommel says, "Perfect reality? Does that even exist?" Lance says she's searching for it right now, and if it exists, she'll find it.
That's one hell of a channel changer, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you ever sit there on the you know, the easy chair and you're flipping through the channel, you got 500 channels and there's nothing on. I mean, imagine how many realities she's having to flip through. Nah, QVC, nah.
Seen it.
Yeah.
Saw it, wrote the book on it.
Oh, it's the Golf Channel, definitely not that. Yeah, I mean, how long would it take to find your ideal reality? I mean, and then everything looks good. It's like, now we got a commercial break. Oh, crud, they're advertising, you know, this thing I don't want. I mean, I really feel for her in a sense. As crazy as she is and as destructive as what she's doing is, that's a tough sell, trying to find that reality.
Yeah, but it gives our heroes a chance to do some other things while she's looking for it.
That's true.
So Pitch says, "The problem is the transreality ore has been traveling between realities for millions of years, and it's a naturally occurring phenomenon. What Enerva is doing is forcing that process to happen, which could have catastrophic side effects on this and any reality she travels through." Now, did you get all that?
Yes.
Can you explain it?
What I wish, I'll just put it this way. Here's what I wish Pidge would have said. I wish Pidge would have acknowledged, yeah, remember when we were fighting the Syncline beast and it kept zipping in and out of, you know, in and out of our reality into the quintessence field? And remember how that was going to destroy all of realities? Well, Enerva's about to do the same thing times infinity.
Yeah.
I think that would have explained the point more clearly. We've already seen it. Then all this, well, it's a naturally occurring thing. And my first thought is, really? How often does it happen in nature? There are only two comets that we know of ever. And so my mind is racing during this entire speech, and I still don't quite grasp it by the end. But I really wish they would have phrased it, just saying, yeah, remember the time? Well, this is worse, you know?
Yeah. I mean, and remember how we lost the Castle of Lions through that whole thing?
Yeah.
Do we really want to lose something else that we really treasure?
Yep. Like everything?
Yeah, exactly. Hunk says, "So what's the plan? Maybe we can make a giant tractor beam? Sam, you could do that, right? Make a giant tractor beam? We could pull her to us and blow her up with it? With a star bomb? Pidge, a star bomb?" Lance says, "There is no plan, Hunk. We know what Enerva wants to do, but we can't get to her. And even if we could, she has the ability to wormhole away. Without Allura, we can't chase her, and we can't form Voltron."
Yeah, but it does make me wonder. I mean, this has been an issue with all of the Voltron programs, you know, whether in a particular show they were bonded to their lions or not. I mean, in Defender of the Universe, you know, the pilots were really good at flying the lions, but they weren't necessarily bonded to them. You know, in this show, that's very much the case. They're individually bonded. But it does make me wonder, in this situation, you have six people who have been paladins, and Allura is down for the count, certainly not permanently, as we soon discover, but in a situation this dire, could Shiro have potentially operated Blue Lion?
I don't know.
It would have been neat if they'd at least thought about that possibility, you know?
Well, in that type of a situation, you know, Blue is the one that whatever Blue needs to be at the time, you know?
Yeah.
So if Blue was really asked to do something like that, maybe it would have worked with Shiro? I don't know. I don't even think they tried, though, right?
Oh, no. I mean, it never came up in conversation. But, you know, when you're sitting here going, we can't do a darn thing. We can't even get there in time and all this. And I'm thinking, you know, if you're really trying to brainstorm and figure your way out of a problem, and you already know you've gotten out of a similar problem with the Black Lion, is that a possibility? I mean, the fact that none of them entertain it suggests that it's not, but it would have been nice to have heard that, I think,
Yeah.
maybe.
I mean, our pitcher's out. Can we bring in a designated hitter? You know what I mean?
Right. I mean, they flat out said, and we can't form Voltron to remind the audience, wink, wink. It might have been cool. Oh, well, remember when you know, Keith backfilled Black Lion and the Shiro clone backfilled Keith and all this? Could we do that with Blue Lion? Well, no, because of blah, 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 quintessence, quintessence. I mean, they could have at least, you know, covered that base. But I must admit, I didn't even think of it until this review just now. So maybe we just weren't supposed to think about it.
And Karan could have gotten in his fancy outfit and tried to court Blue Lion instead of Red Lion this time.
Now that would have been awesome.
Okay, so Keith says, well, we have to do something. We'll prepare for battle. We need to be ready to face Enerva. Crolius says, we've been tracking a Galra fleet within our vicinity. Our intel shows they have a Zyforge cannon. Maybe Kolovan and I can take a small team and commandeer the ship. Keith says, why don't you take Commander Lan and try to recruit them to our side? We don't want to fight more battles than we have to. So this is the first time we've heard from Crowley in a while, right?
Yeah.
So the first thing she wants to do is commandeer a ship.
Go Crolia.
And it's actually her son that says, no, let's not fight. All right, let's stop all this fighting. All right, let's just see if we can get them to come to our side, and then maybe we can use that Zyforge cannon. What do you
Yeah,
say?
although I gotta tell you, an alliance between Crolia and Lotor's former generals to commandeer a ship, that would have been something to see.
Yeah, that would have been awesome.
Yeah.
But we never get to see any part of that. This is where
No.
that ends.
Right.
You think that it's going to happen, but no.
Yeah, well, you got to focus on the main heroes, you know, in the few remaining episodes that there are, Sai.
Right. And then Sam says, in the meantime, Slav and I have been working on prototype upgrades for the Atlas's weapon system. Of course, we'll have to somehow find extra power for them. Slav says, always making the most amazing things in the universe, but never having enough power to run them. Pitch says, new weapons? I'll give you guys a hand with that. Karan says, and I may know where we can get the extra power. There's a small Balmera in this territory. Hunk says, all right, a little trip to a Balmera? We'll take the Yellow Lion. Karan says, and Ramel, I've been training her on Altaian customs. She'll be quite helpful in communicating with the Balmera. What's the matter?
I just think that's very interesting because, you know, as I first watched this episode back in December, I thought, well, that's really interesting. It's opening an alternate channel to the Balmera. And it's interesting that although Karan seemingly can't do it himself, and he's not one of the chosen people, it suggests that potential in Ramel. And of course, we saw that her brother and her parents had been chosen by Lotor. To go to that, you know, to get their quintessence sucked out of them. But it does suggest that she might have some potential to be a chosen Altaian herself, maybe.
Finally.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Keith says, good idea. Everyone, let's stay focused on what we can accomplish. So everyone leaves the room except Lance sits in the dark with his arms crossed, and Keith approaches him. Keith says, she's going to be okay. Lance says, I hope so. We need to stop Enerva, this force of evil that's been around for 10,000 years. She has a plan that could destroy every reality, and all we've come up with is additional manpower and a prototype weapon. Keith says, I know it's not ideal, but when is the last time anything has been ideal? Keith sits down and says, remember when we first arrived at the Castle of Lions? When we first met Allura? She told us we were the answer to saving the universe, but she didn't know that for sure. But Allura believed, and she needed us to believe. And it worked. Lance says, back Back then, I was cocky enough to actually think I was the greatest pilot in the universe. Key says, and I thought I could do everything myself. He looks at Lance and says, we've come a long way since then. Lance chuckles and says, yeah, we have. Key stands up and says, we haven't lost until we've lost hope. Lance stands and says, I haven't given up. Let's finish what we started. And they clasp hands.
Good scene.
Yeah, that was a good scene, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. I have to tell you that I was a little surprised that Shiro said nothing in that entire scene. Did you notice that?
You mean in what can we do while we're not doing anything?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the briefing room, and obviously right now it's just Keith and Lance, but Shiro said absolutely nothing in the briefing room when everybody else was there. I was a little surprised by that. And as you were reading through these lines here, I got to thinking, this would have been a nice moment. And I realized that Keith has to be the leader at this point because he's the leader of the Paladins now. And it's nice to see the evolution of the Keith and Lance friendship, but it would really have been nice if maybe Shiro had popped his head back in, you know, toward the end there where, you know, they're talking about, well, you know, we've come a long way since then. Yeah, we have. It would have been cool to have maybe Shiro duck his head in as if he'd been eavesdropping or something and say, you know, you guys have really exceeded, you know, I knew you guys had potential, but da 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 da. Just to have a little bit of a Shiro moment here would have been great. But still, this scene between Keith and Lance is really, really cool.
Yeah, I liked it.
Yeah.
So now we're in a holding cell and Ramel stands before the captured Altaians. Ramel says, I'll be gone for a short while, accompanying Hunk and Karan to the Bulmera. The Coalition needs help. Tavo says, I can only hope through your actions our people can make some small amends for what we've done. If there's anything we can do to assist you. Ramel says, well, we could use some more help on the Bulmera. Its life source is strengthened by Altaian energy. And another Altaian says, we wish we could join you, but that may not be wise. We still have the entity within us. I fear Enerva may use us against you at any moment.
So what do you think here? Now maybe I'm being too picky, but it's very interesting that the Altaian says, we still have the entity within us. And I know that in a previous review, we were talking about, you know, how many of these entities are there. And it was, I don't know if this was just a slip up in the script or in the reading of the script, but it's interesting that they say, we have the entity within us. Is it one entity sort of bouncing around in some metaphysical plane affecting all of them? Or is it one entity per Altaian and this was just a bit of a flub? What do you think?
I think this is like a collective entity and within each of them is a part of that entity. So I don't think it's the idea that there's entities, you know, that this entity is controlling pretty much everything, like the Borg and the collective and all that kind of stuff, that Enerva is able to control the entity and therefore she's able to control every single one of those Altaians.
Okay, so the entity has potentially millions of little manifestations of itself. And each of these is inside of an Altaian or something like that. That makes sense.
Yeah, I think that's how you can best describe it. Like, you know, the Borg had thousands upon thousands of different...
They were called drones in that show.
Drones, yeah. Right. But they all call themselves the Borg.
Right, right.
So they're all part of the same collective. They all think through the same network, you know?
Yeah, so resistance is futile unless you're Allura.
Well, even Allura can't resist sometimes in this.
Yeah, that's true.
So Tavo says, let me go with you. I want to help. Now, Tavo, as we know, is the only one of them without the entity now.
Right.
So you remember the last time we had seen him, she took the entity out of him. And then we never found out how he was after that. Well, now we've come back and we see how he is.
Yeah.
So when they say that they fear Enerva may use us against you at any moment, I guess this is the reason why they're still keeping these people locked up. But as we find out later on, it might not be enough to keep him locked up, right?
Yeah, they have entity power. It's morphin' time, anyway. wrong franchise.
Yeah,
I don't know. It would have been cool if Allura had. Now, maybe she did off screen and failed to do so, but it'd be cool if she had a little bit more time to, maybe try to pull the entities out of the other Altaians. But apparently, that wasn't possible. So
she's been a little busy, all right. And then
she has.
And then she became unconscious, and now she can't do that. So.
Yes, yeah, she has had quite a bit happen to her.
All right, we're going to have to do entity surgery. I'm sorry, that's not covered by our insurance.
And which half of your brain do we have to operate on? Let's draw an X on it. Make sure we don't get the wrong half.
Entity lobotomies are not covered.
Yes. Entityectomy, is that it?
Oh, boy. All right. We've really gone down a dark path, haven't we?
Yes, we have. But you know what? We're having fun. Hopefully the listeners are, too.
Okay. Rommel says, thank you. Stay strong. The Coalition will stop Inerva before that can happen. Let's hope so, huh?
Oh, gosh, yes.
In a control room, Pidge and Sam is pressing buttons on a console while Pidge watches. Sam says, the weapon we're trying to create uses the Atlas's current cannon array. Slav correctly identified that after the cannon fires, the chamber discharges atoms along with trace elements of thorium. Slav says, but it was your father who came up with the idea to actually use the atoms and thorium discharge. Pitch says, you want to turn our cannons into a thorium ray? Slav, sliding over to the other side of Pidge, says, that's exactly what I asked. Sam says, Pidge, all the elements are already there. It could work. Now Slav, sliding down and then popping up in between them, scaring Pidge, says, he's right. All we need is an atomic trajectory, which should be easy enough based on the path of the cannon. And of course, we'll need that extra power. Also, we'll need to jump up and down on 1 foot, count to three, and shout out our favorite type of metal, color, or planetary atmosphere. All right, so what are the different types of planetary atmospheres?
Well, I guess I'd have to flip open a grade school exploration of our solar system, some book about that. You've got whatever craziness is going on Venus. You've got, Earth, which we kind of like that one. There aren't too many. I don't think there are that many planets in our solar system with atmospheres. And I don't know how much we might know about atmospheres of planets outside our solar system. So I guess in the sci-fi world, you could have atmospheres composed of just about anything.
Yeah. And usually it's some combination of gases, usually.
Yes, yes.
Like nitrogen, oxygen, helium, all those types of things.
Yes, yes. And of course, Lance used to refer to Hunk as a gassy genius. So, maybe there's a Hunk atmosphere somewhere at some planet. I don't know. The Nacho planet, or, he was talking about different planets with different exotic foods or whatever. Maybe there's a planet like that. That would be cool.
Yeesh. Okay.
I do want to point out that thorium is real. It is actually a real element with atomic number 90. And I just did a quick Google search because I vaguely remembered thorium from my physics classes. But apparently some people think that thorium offers a lot of potential as a super fuel, but there are a lot of potential dangers with that because it's a highly radioactive element. But, so I think maybe a Google search by Josh Hamilton or maybe another of the writers might have led them to pick this as something that was real but spacey because of the possible potential for it to be used as a reactor, an element in a reactor of some kind. So thorium is real. It is not like dilithium or any of that Star Trekian stuff.
Right.
There you go.
Okay. Pitch says, we don't have time for that. And now Slav, standing taller, says, you're telling me you don't have time to live? And he starts hopping.
1, 2, 3, aluminum!
Pidge and Sam stare dumbfounded at each other. Now, in space, the Yellow Lion and a small passenger ship fly away from the Atlas. Keith, Veronica, Iverson, and Shira watch from the Atlas Bridge. Now Keith, almost kind of whispering, says, "Good luck out there." Veronica sees a monitor beeping and says, "We got another wormhole signature." Shiro says, "That's the fifth one we've identified in the last hour. Have you been able to find out any patterns to these locations?" Curtis says, "Negative, sir, nothing new." Iverson says, "Is Anerva sending those beasts of hers out across the universe again?" Keith says, "It could be, or it could be her." Iverson slams his fists and says, "There has to be more we can do." Keith says, "I wish there was, but without Allura, it could take us days, maybe weeks, to get to Anerva. For now, all we can do is wait and watch." Shiro just, what is she up to?
Cool, he got a line.
Yes. Curtis says, "Hang on. Veronica, cross-check those latest coordinates with our patrol squadrons." Veronica says, "It appears we have a long-range scout in the area, Zulu Beta 1-1. Shiro gets excited. He says, "Get me on comms with the squadron commander immediately." Now on the comm, he says, "Commander Ozar, we need your team to do some reconnaissance for us." Remember Ozar?
Oh yeah, from Reunion, right?
Yeah.
When Pidge was hunting for her brother?
Right.
Yep.
So Ozar says, "Yes, Captain." Shiro says, "We're sending you coordinates now. This is an intelligence gathering mission. Keep your distance and run only essential systems. Do not engage. We're dealing with Anerva." Ozar says, "Copy that, sir." In space, four passenger ships fly toward an asteroid cluster, Commander Ozar and an alien with long white ears. Did you notice that one?
Oh, yes. Yeah, I love the different alien designs. I wish we knew more about them. And if we ever got an art book, that would be cool.
I just thought it was good timing that we're doing this just before the Easter holiday, and there's an alien with long white ears.
Oh, my goodness. All right, we need some fan art, gang.
All right, so Commander Ozar's with the Easter Bunny.
Woohoo! This is excellent! Sorry, not really.
The lieutenant, which is the one with the long white ears, says, "We're coming around. Should have a visual and a few ticks." Ozar says, "Keep us hidden in the asteroid cluster. Bring up our monitors." Now, on a view screen, an image of Anerva's coffin ships. The lieutenant says, "I've never seen a ship like that before, and there's something behind it." Ozar says, "Adjust angle. Find out what that thing is." The four passenger ships fly toward Anerva's coffin ships. In space, in her robot, Anerva floats before the ring portal. Aboard his ship, Commander Ozar watches her through the view screen. Ozar says, "Oh no. Captain Shirogane, it appears Anerva has some kind of..." Boom! The ship is hit by a Robeast, which chases Ozar's ships. The Robeast draws two sickle-like weapons. Commander Ozar says, "Evasive maneuvers, open fire." Their ships fire on the Robeast and miss. The Robeast throws a sickle at one of the ships. It slices the ship in half, and it explodes. The sickle spins around in a circle and hits one of the other passenger ships. The ship loses control and crashes into a planet.
Dang.
So, if he was able to get this out, what do you think he was going to say? It appears Anerva has some kind of... what?
Beast? Mech?
Yeah, I was thinking robot mech.
Yeah.
Some type of thing like that.
Yeah.
So back on board the Atlas, Curtis says, "Two ships down." Keith says, "They need to get out of there." Shiro says, "Commander Ozar, do you copy?" Ozar, with a bunch of static, says, "Fall back!" And he screams. And then Veronica says, "We've lost connection." So do you think his whole fleet of four ships is gone?
Yeah, I think so. What about you?
Yeah, I kind of got that sense with when he said fall back and then he screams and then they lose connection. And then when you see the Robeast again, it just looks like there's this big cloud of dust.
Yeah, and then when it says, ha ha, that's a pretty good sign.
I liked Commander Ozar.
I did too. He was cool. I like that this show introduced secondary or minor characters and kept them around and didn't just keep inventing new ones, so that you kind of got, I mean, obviously that saves on how many characters you have to design, but the dramatic impact, the benefit is that you get to know and like these characters, and it makes the impact a lot stronger when these characters die. So yeah, I mean, it sucked that he died. I guess this was his exit, and Ozar, we salute you.
Yes. My question is, was it worth it? I mean, did we really get any intel that we didn't have before?
Can't say so.
No.
I don't think so.
Because he wasn't able to get out the information in time, I don't think it really helped. And, you know, was it right for Shiro to put his little squad in that type of a position against somebody like Enerva?
Yeah, I don't. I mean, as soon as I was thinking, oh yeah, keep your distance. The very first time I watched this, I'm like, nah, this isn't going to end well. I mean, you know, the Atlas can't possibly get there in time. Voltron is unavailable, etc. Yeah, it didn't go well at all, did it?
I was waiting for him to say, keep your distance, but don't look like you're keeping your distance. I don't know. Fly casual.
It's an older code, but it checks out.
Yeah.
Shall I clear them? Man, okay. We reach, sir, and it's terrifying. I'm kidding.
So should we have a small moment of silence for Ozar and his crew?
In an audio-only podcast, that probably wouldn't play well, but sure.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, we're back.
Okay, Shiro and the others stare at the view screen. Inside the Robe Beast, Merla talks to Enerva on her view screen.
Oh, you know what? I'm sorry to cut it off, but that was the last of the Easter Bunny, too.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
I mean, that, you know, that's kind of a big deal, too. I don't think we need another moment of silence, but the Easter Bunny is dead. Long live the Easter Bunny.
Yeah, the time that we spent with that Easter Bunny was kind of hollow.
Love it.
Okay. So Enerva says, preparations are complete. Set a course for Altea. It's time. In the control room, Slav jumps up and down. Slav says, 1, 2, 3, yellow. 1, 2, 3. Pitch says, we are so close to finishing this cannon upgrade. Why do you keep doing that? Slav says, what I don't understand is why aren't you joining me? I've explained data point probability extrapolation multiple times. Is it too hard to believe that small changes can alter entire reality trajectories? Pitch says, no, that's not hard to believe. What's hard to believe is that someone can predict the future based on probabilities calculated from random data points. Slav holds up a hologram. Pidge turns to him. Pidge says, wait, you've done that? Slav says, I calculate future probabilities in my spare time for fun. And trust me, if this one does not change, the trajectory that we're on will lead us to total annihilation, a reality-ending event with repercussions through space-time itself. Everything that is, that ever will be, and that ever was will cease to exist in the blink of an eye. Slav starts jumping up again. 1, 2, 3, yellow. Pitch jumps up. 1, 2, 3, palladium.
Yes, and of course, we already knew that Slav did a lot of this stuff because, you know, back as far as Escape from Beta Traz, he was talking about percentages that, you know, the likelihood, probabilities that various things would happen. So I guess this is news to Pidge, but not to us.
Yeah. I mean, imagine if, you know, people say that trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, that's what's called insane, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the opposite of that would be trying very small changes that can have a ripple effect and can actually alter entire reality trajectories.
Yes, we should all try to do that. You know, but in all seriousness, I mean, we do see that in our daily lives. I mean, every time you smile at someone who needs a smile, or you say something nice to someone who needs it, And there is a ripple effect there. I mean, every day that you make brighter for someone increases the odds that that person is going to make the day better for another person or multiple people. And the opposite is true. I mean, if you are rude to someone without meaning to be, that can trickle down as well. So, I mean, there are ripple effects in the real world. I don't know that jumping up and down in like at your favorite shopping mall or whatever, if there are any still open, and saying 1, 2, 3 aluminum is going to change a lot, except maybe get you thrown in the crazy house. But you never know. You never know.
Did you ever see the movie Tomorrowland?
Yes, I did.
With George Clooney?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. This is the best example I can see of this exact situation.
Mm-hmm.
He had his own probability machine running.
Right.
For the end of the Earth. He had it at 100%. There was 100% chance that the Earth was going to end.
Mm-hmm.
And he knew the exact date. And he asked the girl, he said, if you knew the exact date of your death, would you change anything? Or would you just keep on going? Or what would you do if you knew exactly when you were going to die? She said, I wouldn't accept that. It hasn't happened yet. So therefore, I can still change it. And she just refused to believe that something that's in the future is still going to happen no matter what we do. And with her belief and hope that there is a better future out there, it changed the probability machine to knock it down to like, I don't know, it was 99.6% or something like that. And that little flicker was enough for him to, you know, act upon it.
Yeah, that is a great example.
Yeah. So you can change future realities and trajectories and everything with just small changes.
That's right. Or as they said in the introduction of Knight Rider, one man can make a difference, Michael. Anyway. I hadn't brought Knight Rider up in a while, so you got to give me some credit there.
Okay. On the bridge, Veronica says, Anerva's made another jump, bringing up her location. Shiro turns to the main view screen. That star system. It's where Altea and Dibazol once existed. And he looks left and right. Curtis says, sir? Shiro says, she's returned home. That's where she's going to cross through realities. She's going back to the original coordinates of Altea, and that's where she's going to do this thing where she crosses through the realities.
Is she doing this because when she emerges, I'm assuming that this is true, but as she emerges through these portals and passes through realities, she's going to be close enough to where she once lived that she can more easily see
all of those different realities.
Yeah, what Altea and Dibazol are really like in those different realities. Instead of if she's in the middle of, you know, if she's somewhere between galaxies, hopping realities at that point would be kind of lame if she then had to fly to Altea in each and every one of those realities. That'd be kind of...
Exactly.
Yeah. That'd be a little silly.
Yep. So now in the sick bay, Allura lies in a bed unconscious. Lance holds her hand, sitting next to the bed. Lance says, Allura, I don't know if you can hear me, but we need your help. Anerva could cross through realities any time now, and you're the only one that can get us to her. Please, we need you. This universe needs you. Every reality needs you. And he stammers a little bit and says, and most of all, I need you. I can't imagine this world without you. Come back to me.
Knowing what happens in just two episodes makes this moment even sadder.
Yeah. Hmm. I know. Yeah, she comes back to him only to leave him again.
Yeah.
So Allura moves her head and slowly opens her eyes. She looks over at Lance, who's staring at the floor. And Allura softly says, Lance? And he looks up at her with wide eyes. Lance says, Allura! Then a bright light, then on her ship, Anerva's eyes glow yellow. Anerva says, the princess has awakened. So way over on the other side of the galaxy, Anerva knows this is happening.
Yep.
Wouldn't that upset you if that somebody knew way on the other side of the universe what you were doing?
Yeah. I mean, can't a girl get any privacy? Come on.
Do you remember the comedian Stephen Wright?
Yes.
Stephen Wright's the guy that talks monotone and he seems like he's not having a good time at all, but a lot of what he says is very funny. He once said that there was this light switch in his room and he kept on turning it on and off and it never did anything and he didn't know what it did. But every once in a while he would just turn it on and off. And then the other day he got a letter from a lady in Germany and the letter said, "Cut it out."
Love
So Minerva knows what's going on with Allura all the time.
it.
So on the Bridge of the Atlas, Shiro, Keith, and Pidge turn as Lance and Allura enter. Shiro says, "Allura, it's great to have you back. How are you feeling?" Allura says, "A little weak, but I'll manage." Keith says, "I hate to throw this all on you at once, but we don't have much time. We need to get to Altea's coordinates immediately. Minerva's already there." Pitch says, "What about Hunk and Karan?" So Shiro says, "Veronica, open up a channel to the Yellow Lion." Veronica says, "Comms active." Shiro says, "Hunk, this is the Atlas. What's your status?" Hunk, appearing on the screen, says, "Hey guys, good news. We found a new Balmera and new Balmerans." And he turns and says, "Say hi. Hey." And he turns back and says, "All right, they're shy. Anyway, we're having a little trouble finding a big enough crystal, but don't worry. Karan came up with a crazy plan that just might work." Now Karan, stepping into the picture, says, "It's not that crazy, actually. It's a very level-headed, reasonable plan. The opposite of crazy."
Ha ha ha. I love getting that little Koran moment.
Yeah. Allura says, "Do what you must. I can wormhole you to our location whenever you're ready." Karan says, "Allura, you're okay. Oh, thank the agents." Shiro says, "Attention, crew. Ready the Atlas for wormhole jump. MFE squadron, prepare for launch on my command. This is not a drill." Now, did you notice in this whole episode he never launched the MFE squadron?
Nope.
That comes later.
Yeah.
But I kind of thought he would have launched them at one point during this episode.
Yes, when the lions are getting their lion butts handed to them by the Anerva beast and all the Altaian row beasts, it would have been kind of
Right.
cool to have the MFEs helping out. Yeah.
Because there were only three lions at the time,
Yeah.
and we all know that it took all of Voltron to defeat one row beast.
Right.
So,
But we also saw ships taking out, lesser ships taking out at least one Altaian row beast in a past episode because they knew its weakness already. You know, the little
right.
the chest weapon or whatever. So yeah, they could have made a dent potentially.
Yeah. So anyway, Allura places her hands on glowing balls on the end of two pedestals. She closes her eyes. A wormhole opens up before the Atlas. A bright light, and the Atlas appears on the other side, near Minerva's coffin ships. Around the ships, four portals glow. Before the ships, three row beasts hover. Atop a coffin ship, surrounded by a purple light, Lotor and Minerva's robots glow. Minerva closes her eyes. On the Atlas, Pitch stares at the view screen at Minerva's robot, and Pitch says, "What's she doing?" Shiro says, "I don't know, but we're going to stop her." Keith says, "Paladins, get to your lions. Allura, you'll need to wait until Hunk and Karan are ready to return. We need Voltron as soon as possible." Did we get Voltron in this episode?
No.
No, we didn't. In their lions, Keith, Lance, and Pidge fly out to Minerva's ships. The three Robies fly towards them. One of the Robies fires a laser at the lions. A Robies rams into the black lion, then throws its sickles at the green and red lions. Both get hit hard. Pidge, grunting, says, "I can't get through." Lance says, "Me neither." Shiro says, "Shields." Veronica says, "Yes, sir." And the particle barrier appears around the Atlas. Shiro says, "We'll draw their fire. Paladins, get to Minerva." Keith says, "Copy that. Fall back to me. Let's take another pass." So the Atlas fires a laser at the Robies as black, green, and red lines fly toward Minerva. A shield materializes around the three Robies. Did you ever see that before?
No, that was a pretty cool trick.
Yeah, this is something new.
Yep.
So the Atlas laser ends up hitting their shield. Now, on the radio, Hunk comes in and says, "Atlas, come in. We're ready to head back." Allura says, "Activating the..." And then she screams and holds her head and falls to the ground. Then you hear a nervous voice. She says, "Arise, my children. The time has come to act." Same thing is happening to all the Altaians on the Atlas.
Right.
"Repent for your traitorous ways. Lend me your quintessence, and all will be forgiven." Do you really believe that?
Oh, of course, because in TV shows and movies, the villains always keep their word.
Yeah. They always forgive. Right before they kill you.
Yes.
Inside the holding cell, all the Altaian's eyes glow yellow. One of the Altaians rams himself against the door several times. But on the bridge, Veronica turns to a flashing view screen and she says, "Sir, the Altaians have escaped their cells." Shiro says, "Get me eyes on them." Veronica says, "Putting them on screen." Shiro and the others watch on the view screen as the Altaians are breaking through every barrier to get to the elevator that gets to the bridge. Shiro says, "Bridge, prepare for breach."
So, at this point, when you first watched the episode, did you have any expectations for Allura at this point? Because she collapses, the other Altaians, get funky, their eyes glow, and, we don't see Allura for quite a while. So, did you have any ideas about what might happen with Allura? Did you think maybe she was going to turn like these Altaians did?
Well, every time the entity is used against her, I always think there's going to be an evil Allura. And it never happens. So she's just out of commission because the entity is stopping her from doing anything. And for this period of time, that appears to be what Enerva wants to happen. She knows she's not going to get Allura's help, so she's going to get the Altaians to help her. The Altaians actually break down the door. Like you said before, they've got the power of the entity that helps them.
By the power of entity, anyway.
And then they march towards Shiro. Shiro is not wanting to hurt them. He puts up his left hand, not his right hand, his left hand.
That's a great way to stop people. With your hand, that's normal. In
Right. And he just says, "Stop."
the name of love. I mean, what was he hoping for? I don't know.
I don't know, but by doing this, he really doesn't want to hurt them.
Yeah, that's true.
So they knock him back hard into the floor and up against the wall, and Veronica runs to his side. Now, all the Altaians crouch down, place their hands on the floor. Their hands glow. Enerva says, "Deliver me the power I need to return to our homeland. Give your energy along with the ship's crystal." Now, the unit that holds the ship's crystal is rising up from the floor and opening. And Enerva says, "All of it." So she's saying, "Give me all of your energy." In other words, I'm going to basically suck all the quintessence from you and you're going to die. Wow.
Well, okay, whatever you say.
It's not like they have a choice.
That's true.
The Altaians surround the crystal, then place their hands on it. Shiro says, "No." And then it shines bright blue. Now, in space, inside Arrobis, Merla looks up at the glowing Atlas and she says, "My people." So she's concerned about them. She doesn't want them to die.
Right.
So a light shoots out of the crystal from the Atlas and goes straight towards where Enerva is. Merla says, "Enerva, transferring that much energy will destroy them." And Enerva says, "Their lives will be sacrificed for their savior."
Yeah, and so the difference here, of course, between Merla and the other Altaians is that Merla, like Luca before her, had willingly submitted to Enerva, and they were what, acolytes? Is that what the term that Enerva used?
Yeah, so she doesn't have this entity inside her.
Yeah, I mean they were willing participants, which makes them really ideal servants. I mean, when you willingly, give it all up. Yeah, that's there. You can't get any more commitment than that. So, Enerva actually trusts Merla at this point.
But she was doing this based on the idea that Altea will rise again.
Right.
And with Enerva's help, they were going to do that. And if Enerva is destroying Alteans for her own means, then that's not what the original plan was, what she signed up for.
Yeah, so this is just a bit of a red flag.
Yeah, just a bit. Okay. So the light transfers from the main ship to the four portals above each coffin ship. The four portals rise up, then a fifth, larger portal materializes above them. From their lions, Pidge, Lance, and Keith watch with wide eyes, and Merla screams, turns and fires a laser on one of the coffin ships. The coffin ship powers down. Then all the other coffin ship powers down. On board the Atlas, the Alteans fall to the ground groaning. Power shuts down on the Atlas. So you were asking about Allura.
Mm-hmm.
Here's Allura.
Here she is.
She opens her eyes slowly. Everything's like blurry and then it becomes clearer. And then on the radio you hear hunk, muffled. Hello? What's going on? Hello? Anybody? Please? Are you there? Allura groans and says, Enerva. And she rises to her feet. Now holding onto the podiums, she says, yes, right away. In space before the Atlas, a wormhole opens up. The yellow lion and a massive chunk of Balmera exit the wormhole. Hunk says, Atlas, we're back, and we've brought along a friend. Now aboard the Atlas, Shiro says, copy that, good timing. And then he says to Veronica, contact Sam and Slav and tell them to prepare the weapon for the crystal. Veronica says, yes, sir. Do we ever see the weapon?
No.
Not in this episode.
Yeah, and we don't even see a crystal, really. I mean, we do beneath the ground on the Balmera, but we certainly don't see one get transferred to the Atlas.
Yeah. Well, something happens to the Balmera. We're about to see that.
Yes.
Veronica says, yes, sir. Shiro says, get the Alteans to the medbay. We have a chance. On the chunk of Earth surrounded by glowing crystal, the Balmerans look up at the Atlas. Inside her robot, Enerva opens her eyes. She turns to the Balmera, furrows her brow, growling. The blades around the portal rings separate, then shoot toward the Balmera. The blades penetrate the Balmera. The Balmera howls in pain. The blades glow, then light shoots from the blades as she's draining the quintessence of the Balmera. The light shoots to three coffin ships, and the paladins scream as the ships light up. They all say, no! The Balmera howls, shakes, and crystals fall off and onto the Balmerans. Three of the portals open up above Enerva's ships, and Keith says, paladins attack! So she's using this Balmera as her own energy source when Shiro wanted to use it for their weapons, their new weapons prototype.
Yep.
So the black, red, green, and yellow lions fly towards Enerva. Two Robeasts fly towards the lions. The red lion rams into the first Robeast. The green lion rams into the second Robeast. The black lion shoots a laser at Enerva, who holds up her shield, blocks the laser beam. From behind, the yellow lion approaches Enerva, who turns and fires a laser at it. The laser hits the yellow lion, sending it tumbling through space. Enerva shoots her portal blades at the black lion. Two blades hit the black lion, then in slow motion, a third blade hits it. The black lion slowly tumbles backwards. Merla heads at top speed in her robes toward Enerva. Enerva holds up her robot's left hand, fires a laser blast at the Robeast, which explodes. Merla's gone.
Well, or so we think. I was really confused about this until last night, because Merla is referenced in the past tense in the next episode, the Zenith. And then someone who looks suspiciously like Merla shows up later in the very same episode. And I had to go, literally last night, I thought, you know, I really need to figure this out before we review this episode. And when a Merla-like Altean shows up later in an Altean Robeast, it's missing its right arm. I never noticed that until last night, and I was specifically looking to see what in the world was going on with that Altean. So it seems like we're supposed to believe Merla died here, and I sure did. And then in the very next episode, later in the episode, she shows up in the same Robeast, missing its right arm, but otherwise fully intact. So I had been confused every time I'd watched these two episodes until last night. And I must say that it was so, you know, there was no obvious battle damage to the Robeast other than that missing arm, that it was really, really easy to miss. So that apparently is what happened. But as far as we know right now, she's dead.
Right. Okay. So now purple light flashes all around Enerva and Lotor's robots as they slowly move together and become one entity. Inside the Lotor-Enerva hybrid, Enerva opens her glowing yellow eyes. On the Atlas, Shiro watches as Enerva's portal blades join together to form a ring that spins faster and faster, creating another portal. The Atlas and the four lions hover in space before Enerva, her ships, and the portal above her. And that's how it ends.
So, what'd you think of this episode?
Man. Just every time you think, you know, everybody's saying, we're going to stop her, we're going to stop her, we're going to stop her. And then they don't realize that they're the ones that are actually bringing the power to her that she needs in order to be able to do all these things that she wants to do. And I don't think they realized, I think maybe they thought she already had enough of the power on her own.
Mm-hmm.
And she really didn't. So in essence, they were actually helping her to do this by going after her.
Yeah. Isn't that something? I kind of wish there'd been a little cut to Shiro having a, oh, darn. Or something. Or don't.
It's sort of like when you never saw Star Blazers, right?
I still have not. I would love to sometime, though.
It was funny because in Star Blazers, the Gamelons, they're like a sister planet to Iskandar. The Star Force is heading to Iskandar to get the machine that is going to remove all the radiation from their planet, mm-hmm. so that they can save their planet. But the Gamelons and the leader, Deslok, who is the leader of the Gamelons, they had been trying to, because they were twin planets, they were trying to get the Star Force to go to Gamelon instead of Iskandar, making them think that they were going to Iskandar, but they were really going to Gamelon.
Hmm.
And that when they would get there, that they would destroy the Argo, the ship, the Yamato ship.
Mm-hmm.
And they would put them into their ocean, which was an acid ocean, which would slowly eat away at the ship and destroy it. But in essence, once they got down into that acid ocean, the Star Force fired their wave motion gun, setting off explosions of volcanoes, which would eventually destroy their planet. And the leader, Deslok, says, and we brought them here, you know? Like, how stupid. We thought we were going to destroy them by bringing them here, but in essence, they destroyed us.
Yeah.
So in this case, it's more like, had we not done anything at all, Enerva would not have had the power she needed to form this combined unit between her mech and Lotor's mech, which enabled her to jump into different realities.
Isn't that something? I mean, I do love that twist in this episode.
Yes. So that's the biggest thing I get out of this episode, is that they actually, in their haste to try to stop her, ended up helping her.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
Yeah, and it's the other impression I had from this episode, I totally agree with you on that, and that's a really cool twist. The other impression I had is that it reminded me a little bit of one of the Disney parks, because, you know, we really want to, you know, it's like you go to Disney World or whatever, Disneyland, and you really want to ride that ride, but you've got to wait in line forever. And then you finally get there and you rush to get on the ride. I kind of felt like like our heroes were in the same boat. I mean, they're stuck. They can't go anywhere because they can't possibly catch up to, you know, to Enerva, wherever she is. They're stuck waiting around. And then at the very end, oh, yeah, we can do it. Yeah, let's go. And they go in great haste and wind up, you know, and then the twist happens. So, you know, It's almost like them being forced to sit around increased their haste at the end of the episode even more. Yeah, Minerva, she kind of, she served. They got served by Minerva.
Mm-hmm. Yep, completely. And this isn't the first time that's happened either.
That's true.
I mean, she's beaten them on so many different ways, which is kind of the opposite of the original Hagar character, remember?
Yes. Hagar is still my favorite character from Defender of the Universe, in part, mostly because of her attitude. I love the over-the-top dialogue and how she kind of plays with Zarkon and Lotor in that show. But yes, she was less than consistently victorious. Let's put it that way.
Well, it was every time she put up a new Rogue Beast, it got defeated. And, you know, time and time again, she would try a different angle and try a different way to defeat them. And she would always fail.
Yeah.
But in this case, Minerva has beaten these guys time and time again.
Yeah. She's got it together for someone who doesn't have it together.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's what I got out of this episode.
Yeah. And were you surprised by the merging of the mechs at the end?
No.
Nah, I really wasn't either.
No.
I mean, to be frank with you, with all the craziness happening, the temple ship moving around, you know, a nervous ship made from the temple on Oriond and it looking like this. And I still believe that ship looks like a perversion of the Castle of Lions. You know, you've got the main trunk and then the four towers. I mean, they're detached. They're not connected like the castle.
Right. They're all big enough to hold a lion, too.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, they got all the crazy purple energy flopping around everywhere and the big portals here and there. And with all the craziness going on, the merging of the Robeasts, although it was a oh crap moment, it didn't really feel like maybe as climactic as maybe it was intended, because so many other amazing things were happening. It was not a shock to me.
Yeah, I didn't expect that the ending of this episode was going to be something earth-shattering, you know what I mean?
Yes, pun intended.
But I think the idea was that this was just going to flow into the next episode.
Yeah, and it certainly did.
Yeah. So I sort of saw this as almost like a two-parter in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Even though we had just had a two-parter with the Knights of Light Part 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these two episodes definitely flow together really well.
Yep, totally agree.
So that's what we're going to be doing on our next episode review.
Yes, we're going to be talking about the Zenith, and we don't mean a television.
No, the Zenith actually refers to this combined mech now, isn't it?
Does it?
That's the idea that I got from when we talked to Joaquim and Lauren.
Yeah, they actually gave it a nickname, I think. Zenithtron or something like that. I can't remember. Yeah.
So this is the mech that gets her through all the different realities.
Yeah.
Her own little Voltron.
Yep. Except it's not so little. It's sizable. It's
her own Voltron.
Yeah, plenty of room for one. There's probably a pool in there somewhere, maybe a bowling alley. I mean, she's got it made.
And power enough to destroy all of her own Robeasts that she's already created.
Yeah, yeah. There's probably even a Cuisinart in there somewhere. It's quite a thing to take with you as you journey into your perfect reality.
Yeah, did you ever notice, have we ever seen Minerva or Hagar eat anything?
No, I don't think so.
She's certainly not on the food goo diet, you know what I mean?
Well, she's got all that purple energy. Maybe it's energized food goo. I kind of doubt that.
Yeah, I'd like to know what her diet is.
It's probably not TV dinners. I don't know.
I don't know. That'll take us into the Zenith and then our final episode.
Yes, isn't that crazy? I mean, it's been a long road getting from there to here, to quote Star Trek Enterprise, but in a way, it's been in the blink of an eye. It's just, my goodness, time flies.
Yeah, and it's flying for us, too. I mean, even though it's taken us a while to get from where the episodes came out on December 14th, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, we've been doing more than episode reviews, and so that's one of the reasons. But as we finish Voltron Legendary Defender episode reviews, we have a whole lot of really cool things coming up. So the podcast goes on, Voltron goes on, and we're looking forward to a lot more fun after we finish the episode reviews.
Right. So we're also going to be seeing a whole bunch of Voltron fans at Volcon in October.
Yeah, there's still not been a whole lot officially announced about it yet, but I am really, really excited. It should be a lot of fun to meet friends and fellow fans, old and new. So that'll be a lot of fun coming in October. Right. And if you want more info, check out voltcon.org. And the official store for voltcon.org is actually the Voltron store. That's store.voltron.com.
Yeah, and right now they have a poster set available.
Yeah, some cool stuff.
Yeah, so go check that out.
Absolutely.
And that's going to do it for us for this week.
All right, it's been fun, and we'll jump into the Zenith next time.
Yeah, so thank you for listening to Let's Voltron, the official Voltron podcast, and we'll see you all next time on...
One, two, three, Let's Voltron!